It is 8:30, and we have with us live in the studios once again, Joff Parrish, co-editor at Eat the Steak. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Tons of stuff to cover, so.
Yeah, all the news that we've been, it's been in abeyance for a month because of the election, came back with a vengeance this week.
Yeah, the spigot is open. So, starting with, speaking of the election, Darcy Berner.
Yeah, she lost, but she didn't lose by very much. It was kind of surprising that she didn't have the advantage in King County, folks thought she did, and actually she probably would not have conceded when she did had AP not called the election, but nonetheless, even though the Democrats didn't make any pickups in Congress in Washington State, they did get an enormous number of additional state House and Senate seats, particularly on the east side. Of course, the state Republicans spent something like $5 million to keep Reichert in office, which is money they would have spent elsewhere otherwise. So it was certainly not a campaign in vain. And, you know, hopefully Darcy will run again in 2008. I know people were talking with her about that probably as we speak. Well, maybe she's sleeping in today, but, you know. They've certainly been talking with her about it this past week. So she did a good job. And, you know, people should be proud that they came that close to unseating the representative from the hair care product industry.
All right. Moving along, the state of Puget Sound is pretty messy out there.
Yeah, I love the headline in the PI yesterday that was, quote, EPA rejoins flight to clean... Excuse me, rejoins flight. EPA rejoins fight to clean up Puget Sound. Well, you may ask yourself the obvious question. What is this EPA? It stands for Environmental Protection Agency. And why is the Environmental Protection Agency rejoining a fight to, you know, protect the environment? Well, in the case of Puget Sound, there's a very simple reason for this, which is that it is one of the fruits of the Democratic victory on November 7th, because the new chair of the subcommittee that has control of the appropriations for the Environmental Protection Agency is none other than Norm Dix, whose district is on Puget Sound. Therefore, the APA is suddenly interested in cleaning up Puget Sound. Funny how Washington, D.C. works.
Hmm. Speaking of the Sound, the people that are in charge of our ports, there's an interesting article this week about their apparently one of the terminals that they had built... Just
2003, they built a new $18 million facility.
For cruise ships.
For cruise ships, correct, at Terminal 30, I believe it was, in the port of Seattle. And now they're going to tear it down. Why are they going to tear it down? Because they are building a new, $70 or $80 million, something ridiculous like that, facility at Terminal 91 in Magnolia. And instead, they want to build at Terminal 18, or I'm sorry, at Terminal 30.
It's
Terminal 18, and it's $18 million. That's why I'm getting so confused.
$30 million.
$30 million. Okay, I knew I was going to get this crossed up, but it is Terminal 18. You're right. That they're going to rebuild at Terminal 18, essentially the same, although obviously a newer building, but the same sort of container facility that they tore down in 2003. Now, there's several things that make this a kicker, aside from the fact that the Port of Seattle is a wasteland of waste and corruption to begin with. But they rammed through the permitting process and, you know, skipped all the environmental review and yada, yada, yada to get this thing built in 2003. They're trying to do the same thing now, again, at Terminal 18, to tear down the facility and replace it with the new one. The argument here was that, well, they needed to hire cruise lines away from Vancouver, BC, and they couldn't wait for the facility at Terminal 91 to be finished, so that they needed to have the facility up and running briefly at Terminal 18. Well, the problem is, of course, that they spent way more money building the building that they're now going to tear down than they got from the cruise lines, and the cruise lines were new on a year-by-year basis anyway, so they could have hired them away from Vancouver at any time, and they could lose them from the Port of Seattle at any time between now and when they presumably move in at Terminal 91. The final kicker to all of this is that this happened on Wednesday. Very quietly on Tuesday, the Port of Seattle commissioners voted to raise their taxing authority for the year 2007 by about $6 million so that King County taxpayers, rather than what they've done traditionally in past years, which is setting the percentage of value of property taxes and then capping it so they can only raise by so much, what they decided to do was scale back the rate of taxation by a little bit, but not cap it so that the appreciation of properties, particularly commercial properties in King County, because it's a taxing authority for the entire county, so that can be raised indefinitely. They figure they're going to raise an additional $6 million this way. A lot of the in 2007 alone, a lot of the money for these the additional money that they need is going into these two projects, the tearing down at Terminal 18, the building of the new facility at Terminal 91 in Magnolia. So, dubia, and it would also be very interesting to see who's getting the contracts for this, since it's a very much scratch my back, scratch yours kind of place. So, once again, the need for accountability at Port of Seattle, by far the most corrupt public agency we have in Western Washington that I'm aware of.
Mm. All right. Moving along, the King County Jail got a little bit of coverage this week.
Yeah, not a whole lot. And this should have been a page one story, you know, front of the evening newscast kind of thing. Report commissioned a report issued by a consulting group that was retained by the county that specializes in problems with sexual improprieties in jail systems, looking at the King County Jail and finding that a, quote, sexualized atmosphere permeates the King County Jail. There have been four separate instances that are currently in various stages of education right now of jails having sexual relationships with inmates. And, you know, if there's four that have been caught, and one of the things the report mentioned was that there are blind spots in the jail. There are often places where supervisors aren't present. You can imagine how many more might be getting away from this. But some of the things that they found in the report were the female inmates complaining of lack of privacy in showers and sleeping areas. Now, mind you, this is with male guards, that they didn't have enough sleepwear or underwear to go around. Quote, new corrections officers often are not trained in how to maintain professional boundaries. Well, what exactly does that mean? You can only guess. But, you know, why was this not a bigger story? And, of course, the reason it's not a bigger story is that news editors and TV editors are human beings like the rest of us, and they're trained like the rest of us to think that prisoners are not human beings. So, I guess it doesn't really count, does it?
Hmm. All right, moving along to national. The presidential race in 2008 is already getting some coverage with who's throwing their hat in versus apparently people who are already pulling it out.
Yeah, well, we had a few months ago John Warner, who is a favorite of some in the blogosphere, pulling back the gentleman from Virginia. And now Russ Feingold has pulled out of the presidential race, sending a letter to supporters this week saying he's not going to run. The upshot of this is that at present, you know, there are seven or eight Democrats that are most commonly associated with being interested in being in the presidential race, and some of them have already said explicitly that they're running. But every single one of them is from the quote unquote moderate wing of the party, from the front, and that includes Barack Obama, by the way, who as Counterspin was mentioning, has been getting a huge amount of favorable publicity for a possible presidential run in the last few weeks. But everybody from Hillary Clinton to Joe Biden to Bai and Vilsack to, you know, you can go right down the list of names, and they all have histories as a legislative centrist. Progressives do not have a horse in that presidential field as of yet, so it's looking like it may be another Al Gore, John Kerry kind of moment in 2008.
Cold chill comes across the room.
Yes.
All right. Speaking of which, multiple developments this week at Guantanamo.
Yeah, a report from the ACLU, as reported in the Washington Post, that the CIA has formally acknowledged in court the existence of two classified documents, one originating with President Bush, another originating from the Justice Department, that govern the use of aggressive interrogation techniques and detention practices for terrorism suspects. That is to say, the president issued a formal document, or at least he signed off of it, that authorizes torture and you know how prisoners are to be interrogated and detained. This is something that the CIA has been denying even exists for the last 3 years. The ACLU is going to try and litigate on it. The CIA, of course, is saying that these documents exist, but that no portion of them, not even the conjunctions, can be released to the public because they're simply too sensitive. I bet they would be. At the same time, we had another report being issued this week that the U.S. military called no witnesses, withheld evidence from both the detainees and from their lawyers, and generally spent less than a day making the determination that people being held at Guantanamo were in fact, quote, enemy combatants. And of course, what we've learned since then is that a startling percentage of the people being held there, and for that matter at the other prisons in our gulag, are not enemy combatants at all. There are people, for example, happened to be in Pakistan at the wrong time and got picked up by the Pakistani intelligence agency and essentially sold to the U.S. And we discover 4 years after torturing them that they didn't have anything to do with terrorism at all. One of the people who falls into that category is a German citizen named Murat. Get this right, Murat Kumaz, and the so-called he's from Bremen in Germany, and is the so-called the Bremen bomber or something, you know, heinous like that, released earlier this year after, you know, repeated investigations by the U.S. and by German intelligence showed that he had no connection that anybody could figure out to any terrorist group. He came out in an interview with the German press this week detailing some of the treatment that he received at the hands of U.S. interrogators at Guantanamo, and it goes far beyond anything that that has been reported in this country. Things like use of 2 to 3 hours at a time of repeated electric shocks, having your head submerged, that of course being the waterboarding, being shackled to a ceiling for 4 to 5 days at a time, use of hunger and thirst. He says that he saw prisoners being put in small cells that were then blasted with either very hot or very frigid air, that he saw multiple prisoners that died while being treated in this way. And, very, very frightening stuff. The other thing that happened this week is the Justice Department. You remember that we don't have any habeas corpus now for terrorism suspects that are being held at Guantanamo. Well, the Justice Department is making an argument in a court case that this also applies to any non-citizens that are picked up within the United States. In other words, you don't have any right to see evidence. You don't have to be charged. You can be held indefinitely if you are not a U.S. citizen and you are picked up for, you know, whatever reason the government chooses not to tell you, on U.S. soil, that any immigrant basically can be held indefinitely in our jails. It's a very, very frightening argument being made by the Bush administration. And once again, the reason the Military Commissions Act is such a slippery slope.
Yeah, and once again, and no resistance, you know, from the Democrats on this.
No, not at all.
Well, and speaking of that, there was an act that was passed this week by our elected officials.
Yeah, in the House of Representatives. And this is one of a number of things that's going on in the lame duck Republican Congress right now. They're not going to get to nearly as many things as Bush would like to ram home while the Republicans still have control. And we'll get to some of that in a second. But one thing that they did pass, and hopefully the Senate will not follow suit, because the Senate has already passed a version of this bill, but it's not identical to what the House passed, something called the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and this is something basically that defines not just protest, but basically opposition to companies that use animals in product testing or otherwise have been targeted by animal rights groups. You are now a terrorist if you don't like these companies, is basically what it boils down to. And let me explain to you what I mean by that. The AETA, as it is known, covers everything up to including nonviolent protests, things like civil disobedience, blockades, trespassing, even freeing animals. This is the part that's really remarkable and can't possibly be constitutional, except of course with the right conservative judges. Enhances penalties against activists who engage in behavior that appears, quote, threatening. Of course, threatening to whom, it would be the question. It even includes perceived threats based on the potential for profit losses, so that, you know, conceivably somebody calling for a boycott of a company that, say, tests products on animals, well, that's a threat that could result in profit losses, so that therefore is an act of terrorism. Now, how that is not a violation of people's First Amendment rights is beyond me, but that is what the House of Representatives has now passed. And it underscores once again, you know, I got a lot of flack a few months ago when the indictments were passed against the folks who are allegedly responsible for the various sets of elf fires across the U.S. West for criticizing our local media for calling them eco-terrorists. This is what you get when you start labeling acts of property destruction as terrorism. Again, it is a slippery, slippery slope. Now, saying that you don't like animal testing, for an example, is an act of terrorism under U.S. law. That bill has not been passed or signed yet, so getting a hold of the Senate before the end of the year would be a real, real good idea. Cantwell and Murray in particular urge them to try to do what they can to block this from becoming law.
Well, and if a boycott could financially hurt a corporation on that, then writing an article about a corporation that was doing some misdeeds could also qualify as well.
Yeah, that's true. So. That's a good point.
All right.
In fact, even saying something on a radio show, conceivably. So whatever you do, keep buying those products from companies that test on animals.
It's like, yes. Like they said after 9/11,
yes.
Just keep going to the mall. Spending.
Exactly. And there's absolutely no sarcasm to that statement whatsoever. Just do what we say. Honest.
All right. Well, the president was making appointments this week, and it wasn't in his calendar.
No. He had one particularly bad one that came to light this week. A guy named Eric Kerouac. I can't. Maybe it is pronounced Kerouac. It's spelled differently, but it certainly phonetically looks the same. Anyway, he is the new chief of family planning programs at Department of Health and Human Services. Why is this important? Because he would oversee $283 million in grants that are specifically intended to make available access to contraceptives and information on family planning, particularly for low-income people. Why is this a problem for Mr. Kerouac? Well, because his background is that he worked at a pregnancy counseling organization in New England, I believe, that regards the distribution of and a particular type of Christianity, a Christian pregnancy counseling organization that believes that the distribution of contraceptives is, quote, demeaning to women. And now he's going to be responsible for nearly $300 million a year of worth of distribution of contraceptives. So I guess that would just be really, really demeaning for him to take the job, and hopefully he won't do that. But chances are he probably would. Bush also, as part of his agenda for the lame duck Congress, has reintroduced a number of appointments that have been judicial appointments, at least a half dozen that have already been rejected by the Republican-controlled Senate because they were too extreme, even for the Republicans. Several really, really bad ones. As well as four new ones, and also a couple of recess appointments, including that of John Bolton, and is trying to get the lame duck Congress to approve all of those before it dissolves for the new 110th Congress. But chances are good that will not happen.
All right. Familiar face on Capitol Hill, Trent Lott is back.
Yeah, he is the new minority leader. He beat Lamar Alexander from Tennessee by one vote. And it's good to know that the spirit of bipartisanship, the same one that's informing President Bush's judicial appointments this past week, is also suffusing the Republican Party as they're reaching out to try and include more people in their big tent after the election losses. Trent Lott, of course, lost his position as majority leader 4 years ago. To the great beacon of racial enlightenment, Bill Frist, after he made comments at Strom Thurmond's 100th birthday party to the effect that the segregationists were right and the country would have been a lot better off had we all listened to them, and we wouldn't have had all of those, quote, problems. So Trent Lott basically has been rehabilitated by the Republicans with the hope, no doubt, that none of us remember that. Or maybe they just don't think that anybody who cares about civil rights in this country is going to vote for Republicans anyway, and it's a lost cause, so what the heck. Either way, it's a pretty discouraging moment.
All right, and finally on the national scene, sleaze of the week.
Yeah, well, there were a couple of them. Tom Noe, who is who is the Ohio coin dealer that has essentially brought down the Ohio Republican Party through various scandals there, has and that reached up into Congress as well, was found guilty this week on 29 of 40 felony counts. So he's going to do some time, and then a report in The Guardian, that I think originally came out of a series in the Miami Herald, that Cuban dissidents who were given millions of dollars by USAID to that's the Agency for International Development to support democracy in Cuba are instead using it to send folks, and I'll bet them they're close relatives, Game Boys and PlayStations, leather jackets and cashmere sweaters, this, remember, for the tropics, crab meat, expensive chocolates, you know, a whole list of luxury items. And the argument that they're making, interestingly enough, is, well, we want to show them this is what democracy can bring you. Mind you, if you look at other countries in the Caribbean that have embraced capitalism, which is an economic system, not a political system, but people seem to forget there's a difference. How about those good people of Haiti? How many of those cashmere sweaters and leather jackets are they on average enjoying per household? I'm just curious about that. But instead, I think it's just sort of a probably thinly disguised theme for getting a bunch of really nice luxury goods on the cheap at taxpayer expense for their friends.
Moving on to international, Iraq.
Lots going on this week, aside from the usual kidnappings and murder and mayhem and bombs and so forth in Iraq itself. The Senate has voted to keep the Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction office, which has found a lot of waste and corruption in the money being spent in Iraq. That office was abolished by vengeful Republicans during the 07 Defense Appropriations Bill that has already been signed by President Bush. Well, an election happened, and so now the Senate has reconsidered and has passed a bill to keep the office open. How about that? Meanwhile, the Pentagon has had no inspector general for a year now, and the reason is that the guy that was nominated by President Bush, that has been held up by Carl Levin, who is the incoming Democratic chair of the Senate Armed Services Committee, because the guy is David Loffman, is not perceived as being independent enough from the Bush administration, which is to say that he's a GOP loyalist, which is to say he's a political hack. Pentagon also reported this week as wanting to spend an additional $127 to $160 billion, that's with a B, dollars for Afghanistan, Iraq, and fiscal 07. That's above and beyond the $70 billion that has already been appropriated. It is the costliest, that will make it the costliest war since World War II. In other words, we spent more money in 4 years in Iraq and 5 years in Afghanistan than we spent in all of Vietnam over nearly 15 years. Let's see. We had the President Bush being reported as having signed documents getting ready to make a, quote, last big push in Iraq in early 07 with an additional 20,000 troops. Those troops intended to secure Baghdad. Good luck. And we had a very interesting sort of little campaign going on in our mainstream media, particularly the New York Times over this past week, to make it appear inevitable that the U.S. has to stay in Iraq for the long term. What do I mean by this? Well, for example, John Abizaid, who's the top U.S. military commander in the Middle East, testified before the Senate on Wednesday. Here's Reuters' story. The U.S. general says troop adjustments won't solve Iraq. And the lead sentence, the top U.S. general in the Middle East said on Wednesday that conditions in Iraq, violence in Iraq was unacceptably high, but Iraqis, not American troops, must solve the problem. Okay, that's fair enough. The New York Times, same story. Quote, general warns of risks in Iraq if GIs are out. Now, mind you, this came a day after the top story in the New York Times was get out now? Question mark. Not so fast, experts say. So, meanwhile, back in Iraq itself, the AP saying that Baghdad's morgues are full and that bodies are being literally turned away from the morgues because they simply have no place to store them anymore. And Iraq's health minister, who has been consistently undercounting the dead, now has tripled his estimate of civilian dead in Iraq from 50,000 to 150,000 dead during the course of the war. So presumably this is just fine with the New York Times.
All right, only a couple minutes left. Afghanistan.
Yeah, several things going on there. The same testimony this week before the Senate, the directors of both the CIA and Defense Intelligence Agency saying that Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are flourishing in Afghanistan. Well, it's nice they finally admit that. We also have reports that the U.S. bombing in Afghanistan has increased dramatically in the last 6 months, and insurgents' attacks have doubled in the last this year. The General Accounting Office has issued a report that opium cultivation in Afghanistan is up 50% this year, and that the eradication efforts by NATO and the U.S. have so far been, and they didn't use this word, but I will, futile. Let's see. We also had, since we're just short on time, I'll just run through some of these brief sort of headline things. The South African Parliament okaying gay marriage. It's, you know, the image we have of homophobic Africa. I guess they're ahead of where we are. Chad, speaking of Africa, has declared a state of emergency this week after ethnic cleansing from neighboring Darfur province in Sudan has spilled over into Chad. Why is this significant? Well, the West is likely to pay a lot more attention to Chad than they are to the Sudan. Sudan has some oil, but Chad has a lot of oil reserves, and they're not going to want ethnic cleansing or instability going on in Chad. So we may see a break to the logjam if only the right people would die.
All right, and events.
Several of them. I'm speaking later today along with Hong Tran. We're debating a couple people from the Socialist Alternative at their conference that's going on, and not at SCCC as was originally announced, but it is at the Ethnic Cultural Center of UW at 40th and Brooklyn in the U District. We'll be having that debate from 3 to 4:30 this afternoon, but the event itself is going on all day. Tomorrow, Washington PSR is having an event from 2 to 5:30 at the Bellevue First Congregation Church, Security and Global Warming, and Sonia Shaw, the author of Crude, The Story of Oil, the featured speaker there. She's a very, very good speaker. And then advance warning on Thursday, November 30th, that is 12 days from today, the FCC is coming to town to take public testimony, as it did 3 years ago when public opposition in the courts derailed a media ownership deregulation scheme. The FCC is trying to do the same thing again, so we're going to have to do it again. And the rich irony here, it is on the 7th anniversary of the WTO demonstrations about, you know, corporate control of democracy. We're going to have a public hearing on corporate control of democracy, and it is at the Seattle Public Library main auditorium downtown, a couple of blocks from the epicenter of the WTO protests. So, God, you got to love that. N30, be there, 6 to 9 o'clock in the evening.
Isn't it in the Microsoft auditorium?
Yes, it is, in the Microsoft auditorium. It's just the irony topped on irony, pulled with irony. Within an irony, yes.
talking as we do every week with Jov Parrish, co-editor of Eat the State. And where do people find Eat the State?
Eat the State comes out every couple of weeks. Thank you to those folks who stopped by for our anniversary party on Sunday last weekend. We had a blast. We are in the middle of a fun drive, and we could always appreciate your donations because we are a volunteer organization. We do this as a labor of love every couple of weeks with the kind of stories you hear on this program. You can donate through PayPal at www.eatthestate.org or send in a check to our P.O. box. That works too. Or get t-shirts or gift subscriptions, or you can just volunteer and help us out with your time. We'd appreciate that. You can also find the issues themselves on the website, www.eatthestate.org, or you can find the papers wherever you find free papers: bookstores, cafes, King County Library System, wherever you go, where we happen to have distributors, every couple of weeks. So check it out. If you have questions or comments or missed any of that, you give us a call. Our voicemail is area code 206-719-6947.